Sahana bhavatu, sahana bhunaktu, saha viryam karavavahai, tejasvi navadhitamastu ma Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Bhagavad 58, deity worship. The form of the Lord is generally worshipped in this system as Srinathji, whose shrine is situated in Nathdwar, Rajasthan. Srinathji is the embodiment of the 12 skandhas of Bhagavatam. The 10th skandha is identified with the head. Srinathji represents the highest form of the loan, known as Purna Purushottama. All other deities represent the vibhutis, powers, and vyuhas, manifestations, not the highest form. Although Srimati Radharani is worshipped in the company of Krishna in this sampradaya, she does not enjoy as much preeminence as she does in the Gaudiyas, as we mentioned. So it's that the pujaris, they don't worship Radharani themselves personally. It's always their wife does it somehow or another. It's just how it works. But she's not as prominent. So it's just about Srinathji. So you can see a slightly different flavor. Though it's Radha and Krishna, it's Krishna and Radharani's there. Just like in Vaikuntha, there's Narayan and Lakshmi is there. Right? Because it's not about the relationship between Lakshmi and Narayan. Like that, it's just there's Narayan, he's always with Lakshmi. So that's appreciated. Yes?
Is Srinathji the same deity in Madhavendra Puri?
Yeah, yeah. No, that's where the problem comes in.
It's like, why do they worship it?
See, there was a yeah. That means when the Muslims were coming in there, then because the other deities went to Jaipur, like that, over, you know, slowly making their way through, because they couldn't just go in a march, otherwise they would know about it. So they moved to one person's house, keep them there. Sometimes they would stay in a place for a few years. Then they would move again, and I think it took 7 years or something for Govindaji and the Vrindavan deities to get to Jaipur. Took a long time. They couldn't just, you know, move them so much. So then, and then somehow or another, Srinath, he went to Nathdwar. So it must be a different king offered or something. I don't know. So he went there. But then the Vallabhas then claimed that they're his deity. And that Vallabha found him. And all this kind of thing, just to say it's not so we don't take him back.
So it's ours, the region.
Yeah, because it's like in Jaipur, then Gaudiyas worship Radha Govinda and everybody. But somehow or another, they were worshiping. They didn't want us to come and start to worship. Okay.
Right. Regarding the mood, if Radharani is not so prominent there, it's not the mood of Dwarka?
Not necessarily. I mean, you have all these different forms of Vrindavan and that, but it doesn't talk to, so the Pushti, so that Bhakti is prominent, not Aishwarya and all that, but means it doesn't bring out the elements of separation and other things, and so it just like you have gopis who are friends with Krishna, right, and you have other gopis who are friends with Radharani. So depending upon their position in the pastime, then they play either side. You know what I'm saying? The ones that are friends with Radharani, then when it comes to arrangements, they help Radharani's side. The ones that are friends with Krishna, then they help with Krishna's side. You know, just like Kundalata is Krishna's cousin. So then when something goes wrong and all that, then Radharani won't see Krishna. Then Kundalata makes arrangements to get Krishna in. So those pastimes where he goes in as the singer or the demigoddess, that's Kundalata takes her in. right? Does that make sense? And that then after it works out, you know. So it's like that. So, but because she is on Krishna's side, then when they're harassing Krishna, they harass her also. You know. So when things are going good with Krishna, then you know it's close with her also. But when they're upset with Krishna, they can be upset with her also. I mean, it's just when they're right together. But since she's coming on her own, then they'll never deal with her like that. So they don't know she's coming with Krishna. They think it's, you know, a singer from, you know, Mathura or something. So then it works out. You know, so you have like that. So somehow or another, it seems that Krishna is much more prominent. So it's just different flavor. That's why, when I can see, Goloka is so big. Because you have to have all those different varieties of Vrindavan. Right? That's the thing. You also have this Vrindavan in opulence. You know, it's like Radharani go to the Rasa dance in a swan airplane. You know, stuff like that. So it's got that Vaikuntha mood, but it's Radha and Krishna's pastime. So it's Vaikuntha with that little bit of sweetness of Vrindavan. So it's like the Madhvas and others when they worship, or the Shris, they worship also Krishna there, or also Radha and Krishna. But it's Vaikunthapati is doing these pastimes. It's not that, you know, Krishna from Goloka and then he's expanded. Like that. Yeah. So that's that. So it's here, they also don't make a distinction here, is that Srinathji is the main deity. So others are the vibhutis and powers, vyuhas, manifestations. So you have all the different kinds of deities that there are, you know, Nrisimha deities and Lakshmi and Ryan, like that. So naturally they'll be. But then you also have your home deities are an expansion of the main deity. So I guess all their deities would be expansion of Srinathji. But at the same time, then they'll probably apply that to the other sampradayas also. So that would be a weakness. This thing is that he's the embodiment of the 12 cantos. That's Krishna. He's like that. Yes? No? Mm-hmm. Right? So in other words, there's all these different even forms of Radha and Krishna. That's why it's specific about talking about Braj. Yeah, that's why many times they just... means in general, Gaudiya's, you know, we're saying Radha Krishna. They mean Braja Radha Krishna. But sometimes when they're discussing a broader sense, then they'll say Braja Krishna. Like when they're discussing Vaikuntha and other places, then they'll say Braja Krishna. Because you do have Krishna and Mathura Krishna and Dwarka Krishna and Vaikuntha. So then they'll be specific there in Braja Krishna. So, yes.
Just this Rudra Sampradaya, it was given to Rudra to Shiva?
Yes.
And do we have some indication? Because here we can say two main groups, Vallabhacharya and Vishnu Swami.
The Vishnu Swami is who started the thing, and Vallabha is who is somehow or another is the prominence now. There may be some of the others still practicing, but they're not the prominence. Like he's written the Vedanta Sutra commentary, Vallabha. So that's why then it'll be attributed there, because then. Means each sampradaya has their Vedanta Sutra commentary. Mm-hmm. Right, so who's written that? That's your... Because Sridhar Swami is in this line also.
Mm-hmm. And when we say Rudra Maharaj, it means it is one particular form of Shiva.
It just means whatever form the Lord spoke to. Because we're talking about there, we're talking about the Vaishnava. So here it would be Sadashiva.
Yes.
But the point is it's the same person.
Yes.
Yeah, so you don't... You know. You know, in other words, the ones that the Narad Muni and the four Kumaras spend time with.
Yes.
Those who write commentary on Vedanta Sutra, they consider to be the Acharyas in the line?
They're the prominent ones that we're dealing with.
But they're not supposed to be like founder or chairman.
No, they're founders in their line.
Baladev, Vidyabhushan.
No, but he's not, because then he's, I mean, it may be different, just like Vallabha and Vishnu Swami, but Sridhar Swami will be taken as the main commentator. For us, in the Rudra line, Sridhar Swami is the main commentator because he's written the commentary in Bhagavatam. So we'll take him as the predominant one, not Balabhadra. There's a pastime in Chaitanya Charitamrita. That's why they a little bit avoid us. Because he wrote a commentary on Vedanta Sutra, or Bhagavatam, or something. He wrote a commentary and he said it's better than Sridhar Swami's. And because Sridhar Swami's in his line, then Lord Chaitanya made a comment that said, you know, you don't do that. You don't say you've done something better than your acharya. You know, like that. He was basically kind of saying that's not very chaste. And so maybe it wasn't appreciated by the followers. Because much of the time, the problems that come up between the sampradayas is not the acharyas themselves, it's the followers. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like sometimes, you know, the senior devotees would go talk to other senior devotees and, you know, the other Gaudiya lines, and they'd have a very pleasant conversation, and between themselves, everything's fine. The disciples, you know, how can you talk to my guru like that? Because they're equals. You know, the God brothers, you know, stuff like that. Does that make sense? So it's, they're on the same level. You know, Prabhupada is a disciple of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, so is Keshav Maharaj. So that means Prabhupada's disciples can talk to Keshav Maharaj's disciples. They're equals. You know, he may be older or senior amongst equals, but they're equals. But their deal is that, no, he's the head of the line, you're just one of the, you know, how could you... It doesn't work like that. So... many times the neophytes, they create these problems. It's just what neophytes do to keep themselves busy, right? Otherwise, what do you do for some juice? You know, where's the you know, where's the jalpa? You know, you know, because otherwise, then you just have to get down to developing a taste for the holy name, right?
But this reading,
chanting, reading, going to the temple program, you know. But this way, you have something, you know. It's just like how much you would get, you know, like let's say, okay, we have our Facebook page, right? Okay, and so we write on there, yeah, had a nice Mangal Arati today, you know. You know, deities look nice. Here's a picture of the deities, you know, like that. This person led Guru Puja this morning. I thought it was nice. Like that. You know, class was okay. How's it going to go?
Couple of likes.
Yeah. How many friends will we have? Not many. Okay? So that's the whole point. Okay. Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. Achinta Beda Beda of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The relation, infinite, finite, God, man, absolute, this world. Wow, that sounds like Dr. Bronner.
What?
Dr. Bronner. You know the guy who makes the soap? You ever read on his bottles like that? It sounds just like that. The relation, infinite, finite, God, man, absolute, this world. Okay. Is a fundamental philosophical problem. Okay, he's giving that. Okay. He wasn't the philosopher, he was making a list of things that are, okay. Some emphasize the transcendent aspect of the infinite, while others its immanent aspect, right? So that was the thing, is mud was the transcendent, Ramanuja the immanent, right? Some emphasize difference, whereas others emphasize its identity. Shankar tries to solve the problem of the relation between the infinite and the finite, or the absolute in this world, by canceling one of the terms in the relation. To him, the finite is a result of upadis. Since the upadis are of the nature of illusion and don't exist at all, there can be no problem or relation between that which exists and which does not exist. But even considering the finite as non-existent, but why would you consider it's not existing? Because non-existence is one of the ways to establish the existence of something. Right? If the material world doesn't exist, then what does exist? So it's only Brahman. So if there's only Brahman, why are you talking about the what does? If there is no existence at all, why talk about it? Right? We talk about it because it exists. Right? Like that. And there is real relationships. So therefore we talk about the ones that we say are false, because there are real ones. But that's something else. But even considering the finite as non-existing, it persists in the form of its appearance, which cannot be denied. then the problem of the relation finite infinite reappears in the form of the relation appearance reality. Okay, it means it appears to be real. So why does it appear to be real? You know? Exclusive emphasis on the concept of identity and immanence cannot solve the problem of relation between God and the world, because that leads to a virtual denial of the world as illusion. Similarly, the problem is not solved by applying the concept of exclusive difference and transcendence, because this bifurcates the reality in two and creates an unbridgeable. Okay, it creates an unbridgeable gulf between God and the world, right? Because that's what generally most world religions do, because they can't, they don't know how to deal with the creation. Yeah. They don't understand the transformation of energy, because they're not looking at it as God and his energy. If you say the Lord and his creation, or God and his energy, they won't disagree, but it's just they don't actually articulate it like that, so they haven't thought so much in that way. Mm-hmm. Yes?
That was the discussion about the bishop and the... Idealism.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. It means you get the. Yeah, because we go right into that tonight. Because Prabhupada talks on it. There's something in the purple. Yeah, yeah. So it seems the berserkly is a man to be reckoned with, right? I wonder if they named the city in America after him.
Yeah, that could be.
I wonder if he actually is appreciative of being associating himself with that particular city.
But it's pretty much in line.
Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah, no, it's true. It's true. Yeah, it's all about ideas.
Yeah,
like that.
It's just ideas.
It's just ideas.
Whatever you think of.
Yeah, but it's generally their thought patterns are supported by external stimuli.
Okay.
An ideal synthesis of identity and difference must be the cherished goal of philosophy. Like, in other words, he's shown if you take it too far one way and too far the other way. But the Vaishnavas stay within the limits. It's predominantly one and predominantly the other, right? So it still works. They acknowledge both, but they emphasize one and not the other. But such synthesis is not possible or conceivable through human logic, right? Because the other ones, through logic, you can easily understand them, right? You might have to have a very good intellectual skills, especially Madhva. His arguments, you know, very, very good intellectual skills, but it can be appreciated with the logic. Right? The clue to the solution of the problem, according to the school of Sri Chaitanya, therefore lies in the inconceivable power, Achintya Shakti, of God, by which the concepts of identity and difference are transcended and reconciled in a higher synthesis. As Paramatma, he is the immanent regulator and observer of the actions of the finite souls and the unifier of all existing things. As Bhagawan, he is the blissful supreme personality of Godhead beyond and above this material world. Right? But it also is the element is that as Brahman, then he's pervading everything. So in other words, this all-pervasive, immutable aspect is there. As the immanent aspect of the world is Paramatma, and who is beyond than as Bhagavan. So all the three aspects. Right? So that's why we always bring out all three, because all the aspects that people consider God has, they're all together, but most can't deal how he's all three of them. Right? Means to say, you know, he's transcendental, you know, he's the creator of the world, you know, you can develop love for him, but he has no form. Right, so they have all these, but they don't know what to put where. He has no form, but that's not the part that's where the affection is directed. It's directed at the person. right? And so they can't understand the transcendental. So they refer, but at the same time, as it's always falls short. Okay, Bhagavad Gita 9.4.5 supports this view. Nothing is impossible for Brahman on account of his achintya shakti. It is possible to him to be both different from the world and identical with it, to create the world out of himself and remain out of it. Achintya Bheda Bheda is implied also to the concept of shakti, which is the basic concept in Sri Chaitanya's philosophy. Shakti is different from the object in which it inheres, but it cannot be conceived as identical with it. Different from the object which inheres, because it cannot be conceived as identical with it. But simultaneously, it is identical with the object, because it cannot be conceived of as different from it. Therefore, the relationship between Brahman and its shaktis is the Chinta Bheda, inconceivable simultaneously identity and difference. If there was absolute identity between Brahman and the jivas and Brahman and the world, the faults and imperfections of the jivas and the world would be the faults and the imperfections of Brahman. To keep Brahman free from these faults, it would be necessary to regard the jivas and the world as illusory, as Shankara did, but in the absence of any other real thing, Brahman will have to be regarded as the seat of illusion, right? Because he's the source of it. Because it's not, means Shankara, that's his solution to it. Right, but the Vaishnavas don't use that as a solution. Right, you know. So it'd be better as Shankara to keep Brahman free from this false regards the jivas and the world's illusory. Not it's that to keep Brahman free from these faults. Therefore, you have to use the Mayavad philosophy, because it's not actually a philosophy. Right. So it's just that. Thus, Brahman would still not be faultless. Right? Besides, the belief in absolute identity will falsify the shrutis, which clearly distinguish the jivas in the world from Brahman. If Brahman and shaktis are regarded absolutely different, as Madhava did, that would give rise to dualism, would contradict the principle of oneness stressed in the shastras, tatvam yad jnanam advayam. Yeah, the relation between God and the shaktis is said to be inconceivable because it cannot be adequately described in terms of the relation between the part and the whole, or substance and attribute, or even in terms of the relation between the ordinary object and the shakti. But it's also, we use the term achintya because you're dealing with transcendental. Means if we're going to try to understand it, we're going to be using the faculties of the material mind and intelligence. Right? So that means it's material, how will it grasp spiritual? And it's limited, but we're trying to understand the unlimited. Right? So you actually can't understand it. Whether it's presented logically, not logically, it doesn't matter. Right? But so it's therefore achintya is by the Lord's grace that you're able to understand. Does that make sense? You know, so that we see all the Vaishnava Acharyas bring out is by His grace. Mm-hmm. You understand by His grace, you get devotion. Mm-hmm. There's always that element of His grace. For in the case of God, the part is not merely a part and the Shakti is not merely a Shakti. The part and the whole, the Shakti and the Shaktiman, the possessor of the Shakti, interpenetrate and form an undividable whole. As we were mentioning before, is the you have the I-ness and the I-hood, right? Means the I-ness cannot be appreciated unless there's a form, right? Unless that, you know, there's a form and activities. Then you can appreciate, here is that quality, right? And that quality, I mean, that form is dependent upon the quality. So you can't, one can't be there without the other, right? Means technically Krishna can be on his own, but then there would be none of us manifest to appreciate it. There'd be no rasa. So therefore, that aspect of him functioning without any of these contradictions, but he can only do that on his own and be appreciate that on his own. You know what I'm saying? In other words, he can be like that and appreciate himself like that. You know, just like you're sitting in a peaceful place and you're very peaceful. You can appreciate your being peaceful, but there's no interaction. Right? Because there's no feelings, there's no emotions, there's no other persons. So we can only understand, we have to deal with the part where the Shakti has been expanded. Right? So then that individual consciousness is there, and that awareness and interaction. But so that interaction is the same platform, but the position of who's who is different. Right? We are Shakti, we're dependent upon the Lord. Right? And so through the Shakti he manifests himself, because he is the Shakti. Right? But at the same time, because it's his Shakti. We are Shakti, the Shakti is his. So there's a non-difference because it's his. Right? But we don't put the non-difference on our side. Right? Because it's his energy. We are energy. Yeah. Right? So that's why you have the element of difference and same. We look at the difference, he looks at what's same. You know what I'm saying? We can appreciate the sameness. But it's actually only Krishna can appreciate. It's all one, and he not be a Maya body, right? You know, Krishna is the only one who can actually look at it, because it is all him, right? Because you look at your hand, you don't say, you know, it's not me. At the same time as you don't think that the hand and your head are the same, right? We're the ones that somehow think the hand and the head are the same. Or the hand is the whole body, or the hand can enjoy separately from the rest of the body. Right? Krishna doesn't have that problem. Right? Yes?
It's also interesting, he doesn't have any envy, so then it's all good.
Yeah. Because he is everything, so why would you be envious of yourself, technically?
Yeah, exactly.
You know? Like, generally speaking, in normal kind of situations, well, let's say, mildly abnormal situations. Not perfectly normal, not totally abnormal. Means the father always has that kind of affection for the son, but the son might see himself differently in his ideas and what he wants to do, and so there may be some problem. You know, the father's getting his way, this, that, blah, like that. You know, the father generally sees not like that. Does that make sense? So that's the point. Krishna doesn't see the difference. We are the ones that are making the difference. So therefore, then Ramanuja is bringing out the thing of, no, that imminent, that oneness. Because then it's oneness, then you can work together. It's not a difference. What you want to do and what God wants to do is the same thing. You want to be happy, he wants to be happy. But the point is you, because you're dependent on God, you can only be happy in relation to God. So he brings out that aspect. But because of the Mayavada aspect, that yes, we're all one, then he says, no, we're two. You know, just to break that. God is essentially Advaya Jnana Tattva, though not a pure identity. He appears in many forms, and yet he is one. What is Advaya? He doesn't explain it.
Non-dual.
Oh, Advaya means non-dual. Okay, yes, he's not a non. He appears in many forms, and yet he is one. His lila, name, and form are at once different and non-different. Even the different parts of his body are different and non-different. For each part can perform the functions of the other parts of the whole. The part is thus actually identical with the whole, though still a part, and as such different from the whole. The concept of achintya, inconceivable, in the Sri Chaitanya school, is distinct from the concept of anirvachaniya, indescribable, in the Advaita Vedanta of Shankara. Right? We're inconceivable. But they're saying indescribable. We can describe it, but it's inconceivable how that's the way it is. You know? Does that make sense? That's the difference. So we don't have a problem using words. They say you can't use words. Our point is words work. Means their point that you can't describe in words is true if the words are not empowered by the chit shakti. If the words are empowered with the chit shakti, then yes. You know, therefore the words are there, a painting is there, the deity is there. Right? Like that. So in so many ways, then, you know, the Shastra's there. It's because the Chintya Shakti is there. It can carry it. So words can't describe, but it can still be described. Because the Chintya Shakti is there. Yes?
What's the analogy you use for showing that we cannot understand Krishna by logic? Is there anyone standard analogy for that we usually use?
Well, just basically the thing is that the intelligence is only so big. It's a material element. So how can something that doesn't have something in common understand beyond? Like, just like I have my thermometer. Okay, will that tell me how nice the cake tastes? You know, you can't judge that. So something that's beyond its nature, how would the intelligence be able to work with that, appreciate that? You know? So that's the thing. It's something different, and the intelligence is limited. It's only so big. Right? It means the concepts that there's eternal and this and that, you can appreciate that such concepts exist, but to actually realize that or function with that it can't. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's like, in other words, if all matter is all these atoms that are spinning around with all these gaps in it and everything like that, so there's no actual support, why are they fighting over a seat? You know, because according to their philosophy, you could fall through it. You know? But they're really worried about that seat, really worried. You know. Okay, anirvachaniya is applicable to Maya and its projects, which can neither be described as real nor as unreal. It does not apply to Brahma, who is described as real. But the category of achintya applies to the relation between Shakti and Shaktiman, either in the transcendental world or even in this world. It applies to Brahman, his associates, Partikars, and abodes, Dhammas, as well to Jiva Shakti and Maya Shakti. Anirvachaniya is a negative concept, while achintya is a positive. Anirvachaniya signifies the coming together of the opposite concepts of reality and unreality, which cancel each other to produce illusion. Okay, so reality mixed with unreality produces illusion, but that means the unreality has to have enough substance that it can bond with substance and create something new. Right? So it's... Achintya signifies the marriage of the opposite concepts of difference and non-difference, leading to a higher and fuller unity. Okay. Distinguishing factors of the Gaudiya Vaishnavism. There are basically two distinguishing factors that separate the Gaudiya school from other Vaishnava schools. First, you have the doctrine of Achintya Bheda Bheda, the inconceivable difference and non-difference between God and his entities. This was, according to the Gaudiyas, the original Vedic doctrine. After being distorted by Buddha and then Adi Shankara, it was reinstated, at least partially, by Ramanuja, who taught Vishishtadvaita. Shankara had claimed oneness, that the living energy, God's energy, was one with God. But Ramanuja detected there was a difference as well. He agreed with the oneness aspect, but added a special clause. The living being is obviously different as well. Then came Madhvacharya, who preached pure Dvaitism, or dualism. This school teaches that there is absolute difference between God and his energies. But this teaching did not account for the similarities. God and his energies both exist, for example. So in their quality of existence, they are indeed similar. It cannot therefore be said that they are absolutely different. Right? But he only brings about that or addresses it on the transcendental platform. In other words, he doesn't, on the material platform, he just looks at the difference. On the spiritual, then there'll be the aspect of oneness. But Ramanuja, in doing that the Lord is immanent and everything, then being that what he's bringing out the spiritual, so it's still the same thing. He's just not pressing so much on the difference. On the material aspect, you know, to him it's obvious there's a difference. So that's not what we're discussing. You know, it's just like, the rock is here. So we're not discussing if the rock is there. That's obvious. We're discussing what's the purpose of the rock, or what's the rock made of, or what's the uniqueness of it, or like that. You know, some people want to sit there and go, "Is there a rock? Maybe there is. Maybe there's not."
In the hospital. They are in some hospitals.
Yes. But basically, it's like, if he wants to know if there is a rock or not, then speak to Goliath. Because he's the, you know, because for David, maybe the rock was there, maybe the rock wasn't there. But for Goliath, it was obviously there. Because if it wasn't there, then it would have, you know, gone through his head and kept on going, right? Because it wasn't there, actually. But it didn't. It somehow or another stopped at his head. Well?
Yeah. He would also eat it to see what happens.
That's also there, yes.
See if you staunchly believe it's not there.
Yeah, then is your stomach there or not there?
Maybe we should do the stone test with some Maya body to see if the rock is.
Yeah, yeah.
Bring all right. Eyes.
In the part of Sambandha, the thematic study, one of the postulates is that one can realize God even in his own occupation because he is immanent and transcendent.
Yes.
The element of immanent is what makes it possible to connect something which is from this world
to God, yes. But Madhva didn't want to do that because he doesn't want to bring out any kind of mundane aspect because the Mayavadi is just saying it's all illusion. So he's pointing, no, it's here, it's real, you know. But it's different because if everything's one, then you can only have Brahman and its truth. So that means this has to be false. But he's saying, no, there's two of them. There's Brahman and there's the material world. Right? Does that make sense? But if you bring out the closeness of them, then you might bring up karma. So you want to avoid, you want to get rid of karma and gyan. Right? So then on that platform, then he's just taking that particular hard line. You know, it's one way of doing it. Just like an argument sometimes we'd see is that a technique used is that the person brings up a point and you defeat that point, but then they try to move on to another point, right, to start a new argument, but you don't, you keep bringing you back to that one point. Mm-hmm. You know, because they're making, in other words, they started their argument with that point, so it's a major point for them.
Yeah.
But now they try to go to some other points, but you keep it to that to show how everything therefore falls out. So it's a very uncomfortable method of arguing. You know, because the other person gets really freaky. I remember one doing that with one, you know, real gyani, very real intellectual. And the main thing he was upset about is where's the fun in the variety of discussions? You're keeping it to one point. Why won't you move on? You know, like that, because they just want to have fun thinking. You know, and if you can have a good fight in the process, even more taste. You know, but, you know, does that make sense? You know, so it's. Okay. Shankara preached one extreme, Madhva preached the other. Sri Chaitanya appeared with a perfect balance, but the most distinctive feature of Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy, especially as opposed to other Vaishnava schools, is the very developed conception of Madhura Rati, or relationship with God in the conjugal mood. This includes laying stress on bhakti, or devotion, more so than one can detect in the other Vaishnava schools. And bhakti is most developed when understood in terms of bhakti ras, a relationship with God in a personal, loving way. There are five basic relationships, shanta, dasya, sakya, vatsalya, madhurya, and also there are seven secondary relationships. Okay, but it's important is that it's not that Gaudiya Vaishnava is there just to bring about a stop the fighting between Madhva and Shankara, you know, and then everybody else in between. It's no, this is the original philosophy, right? Because from the Veda, they've gotten all these philosophies, right? It means all the six schools of Vedanta are based on Vedanta Sutra. Vedanta Sutra is based on the Upanishads, which is based on the Veda, right? So, therefore, how do you get all these six schools, right? You have to have a philosophy that actually accommodates all these other five.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? So that means the original Vedic philosophy is the Chinta Veda Veda Tattva, right? It's not that it's a special thing just for Braj, mm-hmm. right? And then there's other things for other things. You have to remember, Braj is the original place. That's where the complete form of Godhead and the complete form of Shakti are manifest. So that means the original Vedic philosophy is Achinta Bheda Veda Tattva.
How do we understand when we say that, that this has never been given before?
Means the jiva's been here eternally.
Yeah, and we're saying that this...
You understand? Mm. Never been given before means last time Swami Lord Chaitanya came, he gave this. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, in other words, in the 999 Kali Yugas within the day of Lord Brahma, they're only giving, you know, Vaikuntha or other specs, aspects of Golok. No one's giving Braj. Right? So in other words, this is the one time that that complete, full understanding of the Veda is given. Does that make sense? Because in the others, then they're also worshipping Radha and Krishna. But other aspects are coming out. You know, just like we see Radha and Krishna and Nirmbarka and Vishnu Swami. So if that's the topmost, there must be so many aspects of it that are appreciated. Does that make sense? In all of the world's religious literatures, one will not find such an elaborate explanation of God and his relationship with the living entities. Therefore, to go further, the special contribution of the Gaudiyas is this very developed conception of Madhurya Rasa, how one can emulate the highest devotee in the spiritual world, the maidservant, the gopi, and attain the most intimate position in the kingdom of God. Yeah, well, let me hear. The highest devotee is Radharani. Right? She is the gopi. Right? And so then you can become one of her maidservants. Because even Lalita Devi would consider herself a maidservant of Radharani. But for the Leela, then she is her friend. But she always sees herself a servant. Right? It is a developed theological science. In the beginning, there is Vaidhi Bhakti, following the rules and regulations. Then, while continuing to follow the rules and regulations, one learns from the Guru how to model one's life after an inhabitant of Braja. The inner meditation. This is called Raganuga Bhakti, or spontaneous devotion. Or rather, it is following an eternal associate who has spontaneous devotion. In any case, it is quite an advanced theological system. One can read all of the Gaudiya literature on the subject, Govinda Lilamrita, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Ujjwala Nilamani, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. There are so many. After a thorough study of these books, one can conclude, in order to best understand Madhurya Rasa, the ideal of Radhan, or love for Krishna, must be introduced. Yeah, it means it's not that by reading these particular books then you would come to that conclusion. Right? Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is written to show you that. You know, in other words, what we're discussing in the morning in the Jiva Dharma, that's basically describing the knowledge that's given in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Right? But it's putting it into a way of a conversation so that we can see step by step how it's there. Because he's put it into, you know, the whole science there in a nice logical presentation. But then to understand one thing, you might have to have some aspect of another. So then that comes up nicely in the conversation. Right? So that's Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, what's being discussed now. So that's there. But Chaitanya Charitamrita, Ujjwala Nilamani is beyond that. So it's not a matter you read Ujjwala Nilamani and then decide, okay, so we should worship Radha Krishna. Those who appreciate worship Radha Krishna read Ujjwala Nilamani. Same with Govinda Lilamrita. These aren't shastras for learning the philosophy. Mm-hmm. Like Chaitanya Charitamrita does both. It's able to present all these elements along with the philosophy. Mm-hmm. So you could say that Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu and Chaitanya Charitamrita, that through study of these books, one can conclude, in order to best understand Madhurya Rasa, the ideal of Radha and a love for Krishna must be introduced. Right? Once you've done that, then these others have some meaning. Otherwise, there's no meaning reading these others. The culmination of the Gaudiya Vaishnava experience is the service of Sri Radha. Exactly how this is done is revealed in the esoterica of the tradition. Sri Chaitanya has stated that as a young man yearns for his sweetheart, in the same manner the human soul must yearn for Krishna. Radharani's position is the highest, and the devotee seeks to follow in her Madhurya Bhava. But it's basically we're following the devotees who are following her, because they understand her. So then we know them, they know her. You know, just like she knows Krishna. Right? So she's the one that actually knows Krishna. Right? Braja Krishna is who she sees. Right? She's the Surup Shakti. Right? The complete energy. So what does the complete energy see? The complete Godhead. So that complete form of Godhead, that's Braja Krishna. Right? So she sees that. But we're just an angsa, so how we'll see that? So we can only see that by connecting to her. But seeing she's the Sarup, we're not going to understand the Sarup. So therefore, those who are her expansions, they can understand. And we can connect to them. Right? Because we are an expansion of the internal potency. Does that make sense? The Sarup Shakti is just all the potency. Then there's manifestation of the internal potency. Right? That's the next step. Then we're an expansion of that. So we need to connect to the internal potency that's connected to Sarup Shakti, that's connected to Sarup Krishna. Does that make sense? First, one must approach an accomplished master, rendering service and learning the science of spirituality. Then, very gradually, one can advance to these other levels. On the highest level, one must love God in an intimate union, which is called Sambhoga. And on an even higher level, one must learn to love God in separation, which is called Vipralamba. This allows one to truly appreciate union. Srimati Radharani experiences both. She is the example, the very emblem, of these two ultimate experiences in God realization. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, too, in the mood of Srimati Radharani, has experienced these exalted states of spiritual attainment. The scientific procedure with which to accomplish this ultimate goal of life is the greatest secret of Gaudiya Vaishnavism.
What?
Yes.
So there were two factors, the distinguishing one in the Gaudiya. Right?
Means in here.
In
the beginning, it was the word.
61.
61, no, that's page 1.
Page 61.
No, I'm saying in the beginning there was the word, that's page 1. So you're meaning this book?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, we just read it. Distinguishing factors of the Gaudiya Vaishnavis. 61. And it said there were two distinguishing factors. One is the Achinti Jadamara. What's the second one?
The Madhurya Rasa. That's why now he's talking so much. It means he spent a lot of time on that, and then now he's talking a lot about Radharani and her position.
It seems like for sadhakas, we start from separation from Krishna, and then we experience union, and then we experience again separation. Is that correct?
No, because it's more of just seeing like what you which one have you quoted? The one that means someone can see God through their work. You were saying that. So that's that oneness, that's the immanence. So that element. Because right now we're seeing ourselves as different. So then that aspect of seeing how we're, in other words, the correct aspect of how we're one and how we're different. So that I would think that closeness would be the first thing. Then when that's established, then you would start to notice that, well, I'm here and Krishna's there, on the personal platform. Because first we're going to go in from the Brahman and Paramatma level. Does that make sense? Then, you know, you further from there. You know?
Yeah.
But in either case, it doesn't really matter.
Why it doesn't matter?
Because one gets the other anyway. What it means, separation means there's an interest in sambhog. If there's sambhog, there'll always be separation. So, does that make sense? The two go together.
So, on the present stage, we want union. Is that correct?
We're generally looking at that because, you know, there's an obvious separation. You know, that's. But that kind of level, that's not so much the point is that Krishna's in the heart, so he's not far away. But at the same time, as if we're not thinking of him, then we're actually very far away. So it's more just becoming absorbed in Krishna. So now whether that becoming absorbed in Krishna gives the effect of being together or apart, that's a detail. The main thing is absorption in Krishna, because that sambhoga is there because they're always absorbed. The separation is there because they're always absorbed. So being absorbed is the element that we're trying to cultivate. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Just like any emotion, sometimes it manifests this way or that way. And sometimes it gives a positive, sometimes it gives a negative. You know, just like you say, crying. Is it happiness or distress? You know what I'm saying? So that's what I mean by it doesn't matter, because it represents both. So the point is that you always remember Krishna, then there may be the feeling of separation, there may be the feeling of togetherness. Does that make sense?
The rasa with Krishna is always accompanied by bliss?
Less.
Bliss.
Less is more.
Less, even if it is.
Yes, it's always. That's what was making the point in the morning, was that in the material world you get happiness if you're together or something, you're happy, and if you're separated, then there's distress. But on the spiritual platform, both of them are bliss, because the point is Krishna's always present. See, so in other words, what are you in the material world? What are you separated from? Means what comes together, what's separated?
The senses.
But the senses remain. So there is the element, okay, of getting that particular sensual experience, but that sensual experience is a particular aspect, is a particular combination of the modes. Does that make sense? So that particular combination of the modes, known as, let's say, that person, that conditioning, that's an aspect of the universal form. So even though the position of it is eternal, that particular manifestation is just happens to be standing there in front of you now. Right? Does that make sense? But then, by location, that conditioning's in a different place, then it's not there. You know, you can remember something about it, but actually the experience is not coming from the person, it's coming because of that connection with the universal form. You know, that's what's coming anyway. So in other words, your conditioning of the universal form and that conditioning of the universal form are the medium for the mood of the mood coming from going through this one, going into that one, and going back. Does that make sense? That affection is coming from Krishna, going through this conditioning, through that, to that conditioning, and from that conditioning back. Right? That's that the Kama Stuti in the marriage ceremony. Right? You know, what is love? What is this? You know, love has come from love. Love is the giver. Love is the receiver. You know, from love it goes back to the origin of love. Right? Does that make sense? You know, it means it's very romantically worded, but it's just, that's just straight Vedanta philosophy. You know, in other words, it's saying the man and woman are only instruments for the actual love of the Lord has for his energies. And that reciprocation, we're only a medium for that. So it's not actually, technically it means it's not actually the bodies that are getting married that love each other.
Yes. This is like the bhav discussion we have this morning.
Yeah.
Bhav.
Bhav.
Yeah, the different aspects, the different bhavs and how they're functioning is also like this process you just were mentioning.
Yeah, well, it means it's always going back. It means here is that there's the element of, because of the element of distinction is so much, right? Because of the point of the internal and the external. But there you have that, the more that common element is there. The distinction is in the individual and their consciousness, but the point is the common is that tasting of rasa. In other words, rati, that attachment, is the common ground. And each one is that position for the other. Right? Each one is the cause of the other person being inspired in that love. Does that make sense? So therefore, here there will be, because that particular manifestation is not there. It's just a manifestation, an aspect of manifestation of the universal form. So you are separated from it. But thinking about it, it's in the mode, so it's in the past, so it's not actually present. But Krishna, he is always present. Right? He is real. Well, the other one is just a combination put together by the Lord, so it has that aspect of it. He's actually doing that, but it's unreal in that you think it's the body. But he is. So when you think of him, he's in the present. So you're always with Krishna. So therefore it gives that bliss. But the feeling is if you're not with Krishna. And they're saying, because physically you're not, but emotionally you are. So the bliss is still there, but it has that too. Well, the other is physically you're with, you know, and you know that emotional. So then that's called sambhog. And the other one's called vipara. Does that make sense? Yeah. So here you can't be blissful, but there it's natural. So it's normal.
It only works with living beings. It's not like you can feel separation when you get your laptop stolen. And you feel like,
yeah. But the laptop also is just, that's a particular manifestation of that particular kind of entity. You know, it means it's a machine that does a certain thing, but they all do that same thing. So, you know what I'm saying? And the bodies. Your quota, but it's not actually yours, otherwise why you could lose it. So that means the computer's not actually yours, that's why you can lose it. You know, so that false illusion, I think it's mine, that's why you suffer. But otherwise, see, that's why the person of the Brahman understanding doesn't suffer, because those moods are always there. Because the point is what is always there? The primary element of the Lord and all those different forms that can be made. In other words, there can only be a certain kind of personality and bodily form and activities if that's already addressed in the universal form. Because Brahma can only, he's the engineer, he's not the creator. He's only manufacturing what is art on the blueprint. Right? So the blueprint already includes that kind of nature. So therefore it's manifest. So if you actually look at it, what you're attracted to is not that particular manifestation, but that, because that's just a partial manifestation of the Lord. You know, his potency. So it's the Lord who's actually attractive. So understanding that, then one's always again with the Lord, though it may be through so many different things, but you always take it back to the Lord. So therefore then you're always blissful. It's when you see it separate from the Lord that you suffer. You know what I'm saying? Because if you like, oh, the person was very nice or very happy or very sober, or but all those, Krishna is the most sober. He's the most happy. He's the, you know, so all those are coming from him. So it's just a certain combination of his qualities are manifest in that form. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah. Yes.
There is this one sutta of Pava, this wall pump, this strong desire to attain Krishna. So is there the same element of vipralamba in a kind of preliminary form? Or is it there?
No, but why are you making it separate? Attaining Krishna means attaining him. And what does that mean, attaining? That means just that you're with Krishna. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
That means, you know, Agasura was also with Krishna. So had he attained Krishna? Does that make sense? So what does it mean, attaining Krishna?
It can mean also attaining this feeling of separation.
No, but point is, why would there be a feeling of separation? You're just looking at the effect. What is the actual cause of the feeling of separation?
Attachment.
Yes. So that's the point, it's attachment to Krishna. So that loba is to get that attachment to Krishna. It's not to get some effect. You know what I'm saying? Because that's what we do in this world. We want something because of the effect. But there, the process and the result are the same. They're non-different. You know, one is the other. You know, it's just like we're saying. The attachment to Krishna is the cause of inspiration, but it's also in its own, it gets Burberry pants. I don't want that. Does that make sense? Yeah, so it is the cause of inspiration and tasting of bhava, but at the same time it itself becomes nourished and increased by that same process. So attaining Krishna means to be, is that being absorbed in that love for Krishna, not the effect, I'll be happy. You understand? That's the difference. Here we look at it that I want to be happy. The point is, if you are looking at it that way, the only way you'd be happy is being in connection with Krishna. But we're talking about something beyond that. Why that happens? Why will you always be happy? Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Some particular points of the Gaudiya philosophy and religion not found in other Vaishnava schools. Srimad Bhagavatam is the natural commentary on Vedanta Sutra and is the supreme pramana. Because the principal Upanishads of Vedanta Sutra do not deal explicitly with the Bhagavan aspect of the Absolute Truth, and particularly with Lord Krishna, they are not given so much importance. No sense. It means that they all deal with these things and bring it out, they just don't give so much prominence. Right? Like that, because as we see, is that for the Rudra Sampradaya and for the Kumara Sampradaya, then worship of Radha Krishna and Bhagavatam are parts of their system, but they're not necessarily bringing it that it's the natural commentary in Vedanta Sutra. They have Bhagavatam and they have their Vedanta Sutra commentary, right? But they're not seeing the Bhagavatam as the natural commentary. That's the element. They're just not taking. So in other words, it's the full conclusion to everything. They're not taking it, they're not emphasizing that so much. Does that make sense? It's a matter of emphasis. Yes.
What is the purpose of the Upanishads, since they don't so much speak about Krishna?
They do, but it's not so direct. See, Bhagavatam is direct. See, that was the point, is that in the Mahabharata, then it's all about the Pandavas who are devotees, and they're interacting with Krishna and doing their services. But because there's 25,000 verses are about the Pandavas, and 75,000 verses are other stories and aspects, the tendency is you get lost in the 75,000 verses, and you don't catch that the Pandavas are devotees. Just like the first canto of Bhagavatam, the stories there, are those Mahabharat or not? They're Mahabharat. But in everything, it's all about Krishna. So if you've read the first canto and appreciate that, then when you read Mahabharat, you'll always see Krishna in the Pandavas. But if you haven't read that, then you'll just see the Pandavas are there. It's a story about them, but there's so many other things that are there and things to learn and everything like that. You don't catch at the essence. So in the same way is that the Upanishads, they give the philosophy and essence, but they don't bring out that element of that rasa and that personal interaction. They're simply trying to establish that there's the absolute truth, and you know, this material life is not what we're supposed to be doing. Right? So that's why it's the natural commentary. It's not a direct commentary. It's a natural, because it's taking that and taking it to its full manifestation. But it mentions, that's why Bhaktivinoda Thakura always quotes the Upanishads. Because then if you quote that, then people will say it's solid. Because if you're dealing with the Shankarites and these other schools that deal in Vedanta, if you take it back to the Upanishads, then it's very strong. Right? Krishna's tu Bhagavan Swayam is the definite axiom for the Gaudiyas. It says from the Bhagavata. I mean, he's the Swayam, you know, like theirs is the Vallabhas were mentioning that the Param Purna Purushottama. So that's why they all say here, Krishna's tu Bhagavan Swayam. But they're only referring to Srinathji is like that. And all the others are different angsas and this and that. So we're bringing out Krishna as the supreme personality of Godhead. Basically, that's the... Does that make sense? The Supreme Brahman, the Supreme Brahman is the Supreme Shaktiman and possesses three Shaktis, Antaranga, Bahiranga, and Tatastha, or Tatastha. Oh, it's Antaranga, Bahiranga, because they're feminine, right? It's got to be long. Right? A female name should be ended something long. Like, so even if you see is that when sometimes the female names are shortened down, even to one syllable, they still make it long. You know? So much sense. So yeah, so therefore they're long. Antaranga, Bahiranga, and Tatastha. Mm-hmm. The Antaranga Shakti has three divisions in it: Sandini, Samvit, and Vladini Shaktis. Mm-hmm. Right, so we don't. You see, in the others that we're going through, they don't break it down so much like that, because it's not. They're not. For them, it's not as important, right? Mm-hmm. Basically, You're following the Vedic rules out of bhakti to please the Supreme Lord. That's how you're going to get His grace. Right? That makes sense. Now, whether you're putting more on that general following and that devotion, or more on the, you know, following properly the Vedas, because that's what you're supposed to do, you know what I'm saying? Then they bring out different aspects. But this element of the Lord and all the different Shaktis, because they don't get into that so much. Because for us, means why is it natural for us? Right? Because we're dealing with the Swarup Shakti. So that means the Swarup Shakti is these three. Right? So therefore, because everything's one and different, we don't have a problem with putting them all together. So that Swarup Shakti, that brings out Vraja Krishna, who's is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right? So when we say Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we mean Vraja Krishna. Because any other is not the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Mm-hmm. It means that's why you see Vishnu, Personality of Godhead. You can't say the Supreme Personality of Godhead, meaning Supreme, meaning He's transcendental and He's Vishnu. But we're saying the manifestation of Krishna and Vraja, that's the ultimate manifestation, that's the complete. You know, as they would say, the Purna Purushottama. Does that make sense? Yeah. The inner relationship between Parabrahman, individual souls, in this world is explained solely in terms of the Achinta Shakti of the Lord. Parabrahman is inconceivably and simultaneously one with and different from a Shakti. This concept is extended and applied to many different aspects of the system. Therefore, the Gaudiya philosophy system is known as the Chinta Veda Veda Vada. Okay. So we need to end here. Okay, is there something else after this? Oh, comparative analysis of the Vaishnava schools. Harihi the other way.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandini.